This is the Angry GM, and I am proofreading aloud an article today that probably the article is going to get posted before the proofread aloud, and I'm sorry about that. And the proofread aloud is also not being done live and will not be followed by a supplemental Q&A, and the article itself is late, and my voice may give out partway through, so forgive me for that. I had the flu-ish or cold-ish, some respiratory shit for about a week, and on top of that, there have been a few family emergencies I've been coping with, so I'm really sorry for all of this, but I'm getting this out as best I can, and so here we go. The article is called Angry Study Hall Session 1. Let me start with this. I have no idea how to classify this shit. It's not quite a true game mastery lesson, not quite an Ask Angry mailbag, and not quite random bullshit. But it is a kind of Voltron-esque mishmash of the three. And it's definitely something I'll be doing again, hence the one in the title. Let me explain. My last true game mastery lesson, dealing with problematic actions, sparked a lot of debate, discussion, and feedback. Basically, I sowed a bunch of chaos and confusion, and I've got to mitigate it before I move on. So this here's a rambly, bullshitty, true game mastery study hall session wherein I, Professor Angry, try to clarify all the crap I didn't explain clearly enough last time, mainly by responding to comments, feedback, and discussions in my supporter Discord community and email. There's an extra end in there. So, this here's a rambly, bullshitty, true game mastery study hall session wherein I, Professor Angry, try to clarify all the crap I didn't explain clearly enough last time, mainly by responding to comments, feedback, discussions in my supporter Discord community, and emails. Heading: Addressing Problematic Feedback. That last lesson in true game mastery was kind of a mess, huh? Yeah. My bad. I could have handled it better. But also, in some cases, you're bad. Because, man, some of you really hate the idea of using your game-mastering judgment and intuition instead of following rote rules like a video game console. Before I respond to any specific points, let me remind you of something. I am not trying to teach you how to run games. Read my book Game Angry if that's what you're after, or wait for the revised edition and its sequel. In true game mastery, I'm showing you how to go beyond merely running games, how to run the best damned game you can run. That's hard. It takes effort, and it takes practice, and it takes judgment and intuition, which you have to develop over time. The rules of your game of choice, whatever game you choose, will not get you there. They can't. They're not even designed to. Role-playing game systems are designed to empower average people to run perfectly good games. Perfectly okay games. I wrote perfectly game games, which doesn't make sense. They're not even designed to. Role-playing game systems are designed to empower average people to run perfectly okay games. They're designed so game masters don't have to master crap like game design and narrative structure. Moreover, it's impossible to run consistently great games by the book. Role-playing games are great because of their open-ended freeformness, and that shit's only possible if there's a creative human brain running the show. You can't rely on rules, definitions, systems, and checklists. They're the opposite of creative, open-ended freeformness. That's why, in the end, the answer is always going to be, I can't give you a rule or definition, you need to use your own best judgment. And even if your judgment sucks right now, it gets better every time you use it instead of rules and definitions. If you can't handle that, this series has got nothing for you. Go bother Crawford and Perkins. Now, to respond to specific points. First, commenter Mac Chaos asked about the point of even having knowledge-type skills in D&D if GMs just hand out information as part of their narration. Why let players waste resources on skills like Arcana, Nature, and Religion if they can't use them or roll them? At no point did I tell you not to roll knowledge type checks. In fact, I specifically said to use whatever rules the system gives you to determine what the characters know. I just said to do it automatically. And I also said the players can't waste actions thinking really hard or trying to recognize or recall shit. They shouldn't have to. The Game Master's job is telling the players what their characters see, hear, perceive, and know. If the players have to ask what their characters know, the Game Master's shirking their duty. It's that simple. Of course, it's impossible to get it right 100% of the time. Players are going to ask questions about the world. That's fine, but that's an interaction between player and Game Master, not between player and the character's brain. Use the skills if you want to. Roll them behind the screen before doing your scene-setting narration, or stop the game and ask the players to roll them before you set the scene, or use passive scores, or just use your own best judgment to decide who knows what based on their skills. Whatever rolls your cannoli. I literally don't give a crap how you decide what the characters know. I care only that you do your freaking job and tell the players what their characters know as much as possible and never make them waste in-game actions asking questions of their own characters' brains. However you use the skills, roll them publicly or privately or passively or whatever, the skills still have value. Players get extra, useful information they wouldn't have without those skills, so they're valuable. With regards to the complaint that you don't like passive checks because they're too concrete and too certain, Mac Chaos, I'm going to say the same thing I said the last 10,000 times you and others raised that meaningless non-issue. Grow up and get over it. Or get on the other side of the screen if you want unpredictability and surprise. If you want to be God, you got to be able to handle omniscience. This question also plays right into what I said about going beyond the game's mechanics, as does the Tothios question, the Tothios. Okay, I'm assuming that this is a Egyptian god-themed breakfast cereal from ancient Egypt, the Tothios. Okay, yeah, how... as does the Tothios question about the investigation skill in D&D 5e. Yes, the player's handbook literally says that it lets characters make deductions based on in-world clues, which is precisely what I said not to do. Moreover, several of you in Discord and through email pointed out that I, myself, allowed characters to make deductions using the Investigate skill in my Learn to Play module, The Fall of Silverpine Watch. Hell, lots of you pointed out that it was the first time you'd ever seen a published module use investigation consistently with the game's rules. So what gives? Doesn't that make me a world-class hypocrite? No, and shut up. Except for the praise. I like the praise. Otherwise, shut up. This goes back to what I said before. As a game mechanic, the investigation skill is fine, totally adequate, and you can run a decently okay game with it, by the book. And that's precisely what Fall of Silverpine Watch was designed to teach, how to run a passable, adequate game by the book. And thus, I used the skill as written. But the skill tells you to do a shitty thing no true game master should do. It's a crutch, and if you really want to run your best game, excise that skill. Or, and this is going to blow your mind, don't excise it. Just go with it. Except that there's this one shitty skill that occasionally forces you to do something that you're better off not doing. It's not like that one little thing is going to break your entire game. True game masters are smart enough to recognize that every system has warts and problems and crutches and limitations. And true game masters know that if they spend all their time rewriting systems, they'll never get around to running games. So they pick their fights. I forgot the word pick, so then it just says that it looks like they pick fights. Like, true game masters pick fights all the time. So they pick their fight. They pick their battles, it should be anyway. So they pick their battles. How often does investigation even come up? Not that much. It's a sucky skill, but it's not worth getting bent out of shape over. That, too, is a part of good judgment. See how this shit works? And speaking of rolling with sucky mechanics, Commenter Yamzi asked how to handle the Dungeon World move Spout Lore, given my advice. And I couldn't ask for a better... Excuse me a moment. These are very hard on the voice. I am a very animated proofread aloud-er. Okay. Commenter Yamzi asked how to handle the Dungeon World move Spout Lore, given my advice. And I couldn't ask for a better way to highlight the issue at the core of all this automatic knowledge crap. See, in Dungeon World, the players don't declare mechanical actions. At least, they ain't supposed to. They're supposed to describe their character's in-world actions. The Game Master is supposed to recognize the action as matching a mechanical action, called a move, in the game's rules. It sounds like you're trying to hack and slash, the GM is supposed to say, or it sounds like you're trying to spout lore. Spout lore is a clunky-ass action a player would never take if it wasn't on the list of basic actions players are allowed to see. Because it's basically when your character stands around thinking really hard. And it stands out precisely because it's so at odds with Dungeon World's basic fiction-first philosophy. It's an attempt to mechanically spackle over the problem that, in a fiction-first game, there's no way for the players to ask the Game Master questions about the world. But, hey, Game Master, I have a question about the world before I take my action, is a perfectly valid interaction. And it's also totally valid to have a game mechanic that requires the Game Master to provide exposition based on the character's skills. Why does it have to be any more complicated than that? That said, Yamzi is on the way to true game mastery by admitting Spout Lore was a crappy action in need of change, is a crappy action in need of change. Meanwhile, that said, Yamzi is on the way to true game mastery by admitting Spout Lore is a crappy action in need of change, but also saying there should be active ways to seek knowledge. Yeah, the suggestion Yamzi made about giving characters piles of books to consult to trigger the Spout Lore action is just more mechanical excuse for non-mechanical interaction bullshit, but the impetus behind it is solid. Well, I gotta correct it. There we go. And comma. Okay. And that brings me to what BC56 said in my supporter Discord server. What happened in BC56? And that brings me to what BC56 said in my supporter Discord server after I posted the early access version of this article. See, BC56 was running a sci-fi game. The players discovered a bunch of dead bodies. The victims had been killed with radioactive bullets or something, and that fact was supposed to play the cluers in. It was supposed to play the cluers in, right? So you play the cluers into what was behind who, right? Yeah. The victims had been killed with radioactive bullets or something, and that fact was supposed to clue the players in... Yeah, I don't need to say or something like that twice. Let me try this again. Okay. The victims had been killed with radioactive bullets, and that fact was supposed to clue the players into who was behind the killings. Or something like that. Anyway, BC56 wanted to know how to avoid just saying, you deduce these people were killed with radioactive bullet shooting weapons. And the answer is, just describe the bodies. They're riddled with bullet holes and covered in radiation burns. That's it. That's what the characters see. And yes, I know some know-it-all asshole is going to argue that even saying bullet wound and radiation burn is providing deductions and that my advice taken to a ridiculously inhuman extreme would preclude that. But that know-it-all asshole keeps missing the bit about game mastering judgment. As a game master, you want to describe precisely what the characters see, hear, perceive, and know, and not one iota more. Where that line is? Well, you have to guess. It's impossible to set a single universal line, which is okay because game masters aren't computers. They have brains, despite the evidence some of my correspondence offers to the contrary. ask yourself, what is the minimum information I can convey that still describes what the characters see, hear, perceive, and know? Space Marine medics know what bullet holes and radiation burns look like. Fine. But why say the person was killed by weapons that shoot radioactive bullets instead of saying there sure are bullet holes and radiation burns and the radiation burns surround the bullet holes? Don't you watch cop shows anyway? Medical examiners do autopsies to determine the cause of death. I dug one of these bullets out and tested it because of the weird burns and it's putting out radiation. The point of this shit is that there's nothing interesting about rolling dice. People like rolling dice, but it ain't challenging, interesting, engaging gameplay. That's why we play Dungeons & Dragons instead of Yahtzee and Craps. Hell, even Yahtzee has some push-your-luck risk-taking, and Craps has gambling and booze. Man, I love me some Craps, but I digress. Knowledge-type skills are basically just roll-for-an-answer mechanics. They're boring. They leave nothing for the players to do. That's why the information they get should have some blanks to fill in or invite further action. Interaction with the world type action. An autopsy is more interesting than a die roll in the field. Reaching conclusions about the enemy's armaments by filling in the gaps between the facts is too. No matter how simple the deduction or additional action is, it's better than flipping a coin to receive the answer. That's why you leave holes. That's why you give the players the minimum amount of information you can. Now, as a side note, I want to mention the oft-cited issue of GMs not being subject matter experts. At my table, I would have described the red, swollen skin and blistering around the wounds, and the peeling of the skin at the edges of the bullet wounds, and I would have said, there are burns around the wounds, but there's no charring of the hair or clothing. That suggests radiation burns. I'd give a clear description of the situation and the facts as the characters would know them. So do I expect you to know what radiation burns look like? At least passably enough to supply a description? Yes, absolutely yes. If you run a system or game that involves radiation burns, you damn well better know what radiation burns look like. It's inexcusable if you don't, especially given it takes a 5-minute search on your phone to find out. There's an adage among writers that holds equally for game designers. Write what you know. That's often incorrectly taken as an admonition to limit your writing to things which you have personal experience with. But it ain't. It's just a reminder that you've got a responsibility to do your homework and get shit right in your writing. That's part of your job as game master. But back to leaving gaps in your exposition to drive action, deduction, and questions, it's the same with intuition-type checks. Commenter Andrew Wright struggled to grasp the difference between the NPC is lying, and the NPC is behaving like a liar, and the NPC refuses to make eye contact. And many who responded seemed to think my speak facts and don't give deductions rule was about wording and semantics. It ain't. When you tell a player categorically that an NPC is lying, that's the end of things. The players have the answer. When you tell a player that an NPC is nervous or cagey or dodgy, they can ask follow-up questions. They can investigate further. They can probe or pump information. Or they can make guesses. The point is there are gaps to fill in with further action or deduction. People constantly ask me how to build good mysteries, good social interactions, and good stealth challenges. The key to all three starts with stop letting the players win by dice alone. Leave some gaps. Commenter Christ, that's a typo, it was Chris. Jesus knows how to run a good game. He's not asking me, though Chris also apparently does, because commenter Chris earned an angry award for totally getting it with this. At the risk of getting yelled at by Angry, who, and he forgot to capitalize my name, because I copy-pasted, so these typos are his typos. At the risk of getting yelled at by Angry, it isn't about the skill choice or passive versus active or rolling versus GM fiat. The answer lies in the adjudication narration conducted by the GM. There's no difference between "you think he is lying" versus "you see a single bead of sweat roll down his forehead as he answers your question," except one is telling the player what their character thinks, and the other is providing context clues to allow the player to make their own deduction. Meanwhile, and the other is, yeah, okay. Meanwhile, Dmitry Zelensky asked me why I was so hellbent. Commenter Dmitry Zelensky asked me why I was so hellbent on calling non-interactive, non-visible on the screen things non-actions when I myself think really hard for a living. So do scientists, because thinking really hard is a totally valid way to get answers. First, Dmitry, thinking really hard is a very small part of what I do. It's mainly a background task. My thinking happens in the shower, mostly. Planning, designing, and writing are active processes. I do a lot of outlining, summarizing, free writing, researching, analyzing, and calculating. And I'm pretty sure most scientists would say their work, while not as rigorous as my work writing about how to pretend to be an elf better, is similarly active. But second, while I totally can go into the differences between explicit and implicit memory, talk about the current theories of memory retrieval, and cite the relevant research about the role conscious thought plays and whether it's aided by thinking really hard and how the process of rehearsal for recall plays into it and blah, 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 none of that shit matters. And I said exactly that in the sidebar. I don't care whether you personally believe thinking really hard to recall a random fact you learned once 10 years ago is useful, because it doesn't make for a great play experience. Inviting the players to interact with the world does. Leaving pieces unstated so the players can fill them in does. That's what a game master wants, as much as possible, because the only challenges you can build into role-playing games are mental challenges. Reality designs shitty games, and it writes shitty fiction too. And that gives away my answer to commenter King Joey's question about how I'd design a good stand around and think mechanic. I wouldn't, because that makes for a shitty game. Besides, I can't imagine many players who'd rather waste round after round in combat re-rolling their knowledge checks than just trying to beat the monster and seeing what works. But not everyone was hung up on the underlying philosophy bullshit. Some were really, really obsessed with the mechanical specifics of rolling the character's checks behind the screen. A fair few folks were just wondering how I managed to pull off such amazing feats of game mastery while running either real life or virtual space games, and frankly, I'm as baffled by that as I am by the people who can't figure out how to track initiative without an iPhone app. It ain't hard to roll a skill check, just roll a die and add a modifier. Whether you're running games on the internet or in real life, you've got to be able to roll dice. And it ain't hard to know what modifier to add. Just keep a list or ask for it as you need it. You open the door and, hey, Adam, Ardrick is proficient in history, right? What's his modifier? Okay, good. So, as your torchlight spills into the gallery beyond, it falls on a marble statue of a soldier in ancient Scythian regalia. Ardrick recognizes the symbol emblazoned on the statue's shield as that of General Pevin Ardoris III, who... It's that simple. And if your setup, be it a virtual tabletop or a physical game space, somehow impedes your ability to make quick and easy skill checks, change your friggin' setup. Your setup shouldn't make it hard to run games. If it does, you're doing it wrong. Meanwhile, folks like commenters Pocket Contents and Kigmet Zomat had serious issues with the idea that a game master might roll checks for the players. Pocket Contents outright said they would never do such a thing and knew of no game master who would. Kigmet Zomat, meanwhile, got around the issue through the simple expedient of having the players re-roll a bunch of... Kigmet Zomat, meanwhile, got around the issue through the simple expedient of having the players pre-roll a bunch of dice and write down the results on a list so the game master could then work down the list. Holy shit, I couldn't even finish typing that tedious bullshit out. Why are people doing this? Why are you complicating this crap? Players roll lots of dice, tons of dice. Rolling a few dice yourself won't break their spirits and convince them their agency is just a farce. And if it does, your players are the problem. Real talk. If a player doesn't trust you to roll checks behind the screen for pacing or to conceal secrets or otherwise for the good of the game, your player doesn't trust you enough to sit at your table. No such player would be welcome at my table. Finally, commenter Zed asked something I hear a lot about how much detail players should provide when declaring actions, especially when searching, especially given the need to strike a balance between the tedium of searching every tiny little thing separately, and especially when there's a danger the character might blunder into during the search. How much detail must a player provide before you feel the action has been described sufficiently for you to adjudicate it? Enough that you can describe the action back to the player and they agree that's what they meant. And if there are important details that might affect the outcome, you include them even if the player didn't. You're searching the room. You intend to ransack every corner of the room and every piece of furniture, looking for anything that seems interesting, eye-catching, valuable, hidden, or dangerous. Is that right? And you realize a reasonably thorough search like that will take a good half hour? Once a player agrees you got it right, they're stuck with whatever happens. When the character blunders into a hidden trap in the bookshelf, they can't say, "Well, I didn't specifically say I went near the bookshelf," because they agreed to ransack every corner and every piece of furniture. And that's why you repeat back the action and get the player to swear it's their final answer, so that there are never any tapbacks. And that is the end of the proofread aloud, and hopefully I will be back again soon with another. Talk to you all soon.